Governor Tim Walz yesterday defends the way the 2024 session ended, despite complaints from the GOP, two of which we have in studio. It's politics. It's democracy. It's messy. But at the end of the day, the sausage in this one is going to taste pretty good because there's good stuff for Minnesotans. Joining me in studio is Representative Walter Hudson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And State Senator Eric Lucero, who brought the actual printed bill into the studio, and it's actually making, I think it's making the counter lean.
Good morning. Yes, it definitely is. Well, it weighs over 22 pounds.
What a monstrosity. Now, I was reading that the title, let's just start there for just a second since I'm looking at it. So the title was initially 2 pages long to make sure that it aligned with the Minnesota State Constitution of being a single line item. Now it's 6 pages long. At the end of the day, have you guys seen this?
I only heard that on the drive in from you guys. I've not heard that yet, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, the reviser's office has updated the tax bill, and it now covers 6 pages with the fiscal spreadsheets, and the bill is now 1,494 pages long. So maybe that one's even less than the actual completed one. So, all right. So with all this, we'll start with you. We'll talk about what happened in both the House and the Senate over the weekend. Walter Hudson, just your instinctive reaction to what went down. I kind of just hand it over to you. You know, what do you think those listening right now, as we've been going over this since the weekend, what's your take on it? What do you think the people need to know?
I think the best summary of what we just experienced was a quote from Senate Majority Leader Erin Murphy in the midst of all of this on Sunday night. She said, "The spectacle will fade, but the work will live on." That comment tells me everything I need to know and confirms everything I suspected about how the Democrats view the legislative process. To them, it's a show. To them, it's perfume to cover up the stink of what they're actually doing. They don't care what you think. And that is reflective of the way this process started out from the beginning of the term and has played out for the entire 2 years. It's very clear at this point, looking backwards, that the decision was made at the beginning of the term that they were going to exclude the minority from all of the critical decision making and just let us know what was going to happen. And by the way, we represent half the state. It's like 48% of the population is represented by Republicans. They decided at the start that they were going to cut us out. So they had misplaced priorities where they decided that they were going to allow themselves to be led around by the nose by their most radical, fringe, woke, left lunatics, who they had to rely on because they had such slim majorities. And then they mismanaged crises. You look at Senator Nicole Mitchell. You look at what Senator Omar Fattah did over the weekend on Saturday, holding the Senate hostage in order to get his way on the Uber bill. And then finally, they have sheer flagrant hubris. Like the whole time, they've got this attitude of we're entitled to this and you people mean nothing and we don't care. And smirks and giggles and hissing and smile. I mean, this is the most vile corruption of a democratic process, an allegedly democratic representative process, that folks who've been around the Capitol for 20 years tell me they've ever seen.
Your perspective on this, State Senator Eric Lucero, you've been there a while and been serving in various capacities. So what are your thoughts on how things went down?
Well, it's clear, you know, there's the old adage that I thought of in the last couple of days, and we've all heard it. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think we are living and witnessing that very adage right before us. We've seen they have this emboldened attitude and they're using their power last year and then this year. And that absolute power has absolutely corrupted them through and through. Their objective, their goal, their radical agenda is opposed to people. It is opposed to the process and it is opposed to the Constitution. In other words, the process be damned, people be damned, the Constitution be damned, if it means that they can achieve their radical left-wing agenda.
Rules were broken at the end. I know that there was a complaint that was lodged, but that's not going to go anywhere, correct? I mean, the session's over. Wallace has said he's not calling for a special session. In terms of what that investigation could potentially look like, if it even happens, will that even happen? Is there going to be any accountability for the way the DFL closed out this legislative session? And, you know, either one of you can feel free to take that.
It's called the election.
Is that it? That's it. That's the only recourse?
It really is. People have got to wake up. They've got to get activated. They've got to get ballots into boxes. And you and I have talked about this time and time and time again. The highest form of protest available to us is getting ballots into boxes as soon as humanly possible and continuing to do so for the entire window that it's available to get those ballots into those boxes. That is how we're going to hold them accountable for this heinous treatment of Minnesotans.
When you were heading in, we were heading into the final stretch, Senator Lucero, I mean, when you were heading into the weekend, kind of what was the expectation versus what the outcome was? I know we had some strange things ended up taking place on Saturday. There was a massive delay because of Senator Fattah. But I'm just curious to get your perspective on heading into the final days, how you were thinking this was going to play out versus how it actually played out.
Yeah, so going in, there were anywhere between 8 and 20 different conference committee reports that we were expecting, a combination of conference committee reports and bills that had not gone to conference committee. So again, the count ranges because it was not fully determined yet what that shape would look like. But going into Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the expectation was this 8 to 20 would be coming up one after the other. And it is normal in end of session to recess for maybe a half hour, waiting for one body to pass a bill and exchange. That is common. But what is uncommon is to, in the second to the last day on Saturday, to recess. And even Senator Murphy said it'll be for a short time. And then that short time ended up being over 10 hours. And that happened as a direct result of Senator Fattah holding their caucus hostage and not being that 34th needed vote on their side. And that no action took place, completely on their own heads that happened. Then to come in now and attempt to blame Republicans for the cramming that they did at the end and the violation of the Constitution, violation of the process, ignoring people. That was totally unexpected. And that is what, unfortunately, we have to continue to get the message out.
Well, and let me make 2 points on top of that. Number one, after Fattah did what he did, they trotted him out in a 10 p.m. press conference, announced their glorious new negotiated agreement with Uber and Lyft, and literally patted him on the back. So not only did he not get any form of rebuke for abusing the entire legislative process and holding the state of Minnesota hostage in the second to last day of session, he got accolades for it. He got presented as a champion of the people by obstructing the people. That's number one. Number two, this narrative that they're trying to spin that it's somehow Republicans' fault that we were quote unquote filibustering.
That's going to be my next question, right?
First of all, when we were on the floor debating, we were debating the substance of the bills. You didn't have people reading out of the phone book. You didn't have creative soliloquies about, you know, the rise of the Tea Party. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was on subject, it was on topic, and it was focused on things that actually matter pertaining to the underlying bill, number one. Number two, you actually look at the individual bills. I wasn't following what was going on in the Senate, but certainly in the House. When bills came along where there had been some degree of at least communication with the minority as to what it was that we could expect, and in some very rare cases, bipartisan support for things, those bills moved along. We had a bill that we took 37 minutes to debate on the House floor because there was limited involvement of the minority in the process of that bill. So to the extent that you had us, a lot of us getting up to complain about the way things were going, both in terms of the policy and the process, it's because of the policy and the process. And that is the whole reason we're there, to debate those things.
Ryan Winkler, the former DFL majority leader, he posted on X, sad but true. The MN League failed to pass a bonding bill because of a burglary in Detroit Lakes and an override vote from the Minneapolis City Council. Every session has its own personality. I think there's a little bit of truth in that, but it also feels just like kind of a complete wash of this legislative session is just like other legislative right. sessions. It has its quirks. It has its strangeness. But the reality is this is just what goes on. And this spins into something I wanted to ask both of you. And Senator Lucero, I'll ask you first. It was an interesting question that and I mentioned this earlier, the editorial board at the Star Tribune, they keyed in, Walter, on what you mentioned a moment ago, trying to place the blame kind of on both sides, but really, you know, dismissing the realities of what had taken place. But they said something fundamentally went wrong this session. And they were comparing this to what happened in the last legislative outcome, saying that this time the output and the process were different. Something fundamentally went wrong this session. Lucero, Senator Lucero, do you agree with that sentiment? And if so, what do you think fundamentally went wrong, if you agree with that thought?
Absolutely, something fundamentally went wrong. And what fundamentally went wrong is a violation of the process. It's not just a violation of the rules. It's a violation of the law, the Constitution, the single subject clause. And that is what has to be highlighted. What went wrong, I think, is what I said earlier. Power corrupts. And you have last year into this year. They have this expectation that they're just going to get their objective regardless of who stands in the way. And so what is fundamentally different this year, as to I think what the Star Tribune might be alluding to, than last year, is that the power trip that they are exercising has gotten to their heads. And that's what makes it different. Is each legislative session a different animal? Yes, the dynamics are different each legislative session. So that part is true. And in regards to the bonding bill at the very end, the cash bill, as they're calling it, you know, so they were 30 seconds late. They did not pass because it passed midnight. And if you listen to the tail end of that audio, you could hear the screams of the Democrats when Senator Champion said the bill does not pass. It is past midnight. And it's as if they just don't. It's the screams signal that they don't care that it's past midnight. They are they had this expectation that they were going to get everything that they wanted. And it is, I think it's very telling when you just hear those screams that the bill did not pass.
Yeah. And look, what it comes down to, what's fundamentally wrong is that the Democrats are not Democratic. I mean, it really is that simple. And I mean that in two very specific ways. One, they have leveraged their most out of touch, radical, woke, left wing crazies to the point where they have to rely upon them in order to achieve anything because they shut us out, right? So they have to rely upon the worst of them, the lowest common denominator of the caucuses. And because they have to do that, they basically transferred leadership over to those people. So Aaron May Quaid is the leader of the Senate. Lee Finke is the leader of the House. The people who have the leadership titles are not actually leading anything. And then secondarily, they have turned that, again, going back to that comment made by Aaron Murphy, that the spectacle will fade, but the work will live on. They know that their policies are unpopular. They know that the people of Minnesota don't want what they are giving them. And so they the reason why the process got so messy is because they have abused it. They have stretched it to the limit of its elasticity in an effort to spray perfume over the stink. There's been a lot of conversations. I was talking about this with Senator Lucero before we walked in here. I've had a lot of conversations with different stakeholders in the Republican conservative space over the past couple of days. And there's a couple of different reactions that people are having. One is, we would never do this as Republicans. We would never allow this to get to the way that it did. We'd be more respectful. We'd follow the principles and the rules and the yada, yada, yada. And the other reaction that I've gotten from folks who have more experience is, oh, you're going to do this. Like, you guys get the majority, you're going to do exactly the same thing, and it's going to go exactly the same way, and the script's going to flip, and we're all going to be using the opposite talking points. And so I've been thinking about that over the past 48 hours or so. Like, is that true? Is it true that if this was all reversed,
right,
and we were the ones who had slim majorities and we had a governor, would we be doing it this way? And the conclusion that I'm approaching is absolutely not. And here's why. Because we wouldn't have any stink to spray perfume on. The policies that we would be proposing would be things that the people of Minnesota actually want. They would be policies that actually work. we wouldn't have to cover up what we're doing.
Right.
And because we won't have to cover up what we're doing, we can actually afford to use the process in the way that it was designed to be used.
Case in point, the ERA.
Yeah.
They deliberately crafted that language, and I think it was you that came up with the term, this is not your grandma's ERA.
I take credit for that, but yes.
That's where I first heard it.
Okay.
But what they're doing is they're using the emotion and the branding from the 70s and then repackaging that with different verbiage under the hood. And they're doing that because they know that it would not pass.
Correct.
If they had used brand new titles, brand new language, and they fully were transparent with, instead of using, I think their verbiage is pregnancy. If they used abortion instead of the word decisions regarding pregnancy or something to that effect, they know that it wouldn't pass. And so they have to rely on the cloak of secrecy and lack of transparency in order to move their agenda. And I think that's spot on what Representative Hudson said.
We're talking with State Senator Eric Lucero, State Representative Walter Hudson. It's interesting the way that the conversation is going because, and I have several comments that have come in from the iHeartRadio app that I want to share because people are keying in on the same thing that I'm keying in on with regard to the process and the concerns that are kind of bubbling in my mind that I want to ask you both about. Cause I thought about this quite a lot coming in this morning about, and I've got all the information here about, you know, what sort of angle do we want to take? How do we want to talk about this? And we've got all the time in the world to get into what was actually passed and the impact it's going to have, right? At the moment, my primary concern, and it seems like it's yours as well, because we've been talking about it, is just how the process played out and whether or not things are kind of fundamentally broken. So let me sort of lay the groundwork as we move forward on this. Let's get to some phone calls and some comments from the listeners. And first we'll go to Stan. Good morning, Stan. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. And you are on with Representative Walter Hudson and Senator Eric Lucero. What's your thoughts this morning?
Well, what I want to know from both of your guests are, what are you going to do about this? So if you're going to follow the Constitution and all that stuff and they didn't, how do you fix this? Because I don't want to just hear, you know, what they did. I want to know how you're going to do something if you get into power, how you're going to run for it and make those sound bites and make this stuff work the opposite way, where you actually reverse what they're doing and undo the damage, because a lot of good it does to, you know, get into power and do absolutely nothing. You need to come to the plate and, you know, make some run.
Stan, thank you for the phone call. And it's a similar thought that I have, but I have a slightly different take on it. But to Stan's question, I'll let you guys kind of both give a quick answer on that.
Very, very valid point. And what I would submit is, I think one of the growing there's multiple layers to what needs to be changed. Among the layers that need to be changed is the omnibus bills. Omnibus bills, they lack transparency and they lack accountability. And so I am among those in both bodies, House and Senate, that are pushing to bring an end to this abuse of omnibus bills. That is among, I think, one of the major things that needs to happen in reform of the process.
So simultaneous to this nonsense happening here in the state of Minnesota, Kim Reynolds down in Iowa has been cleaning house. She's been actually draining the swamp. She recently, and I don't remember all the details off the top of my head, but you can go Google Kim Reynolds and councils and task force and what have you. She's drastically reducing the bureaucracy in the state of Iowa. That is something that absolutely positively needs to happen, I think. Now, of course, in order to do that, you got to win statewide, right? Which we haven't done in quite a long time. You have to get a governor. If we were to get both the Senate and the House, we could be the ones who are proposing amendments to the Constitution. And I think that there's a variety of amendments that should properly be considered to place on our state constitution that would have a direct impact on a lot of this stuff. One of them is a taxpayer's bill of rights, where we say, listen, the state, we are not going to allow what happened in 2023 to ever happen again, where you have this massive ballooning in the state budget by 40%. The budget growth is going to be capped based on population and inflation, and it cannot constitutionally ever go any higher than that. That places a throttling mechanism upon the growth of government and the expansion of the state. And then I think, you know, if you ever do get that trifecta, then you got to do what they did the right way for the right purpose, which is flex your power to fundamentally restructure how state government works. The first thing I would want to do is create a task force to end task forces. Like, let's go down the list. We're going to get a group of people together, and we're just going to review all of these offices and councils and task force and
commissions
and high five teams and whatever it is we're calling them. And are these people actually doing anything? And is it of value to the people of Minnesota? Those are the only two questions that matter. And if the answer is anything yes, then an absolute affirmative demonstrable yes, they're done. And then we make sure that we sunset. This is another potential constitutional amendment we could put in there, that anytime the legislature delegates its authority in any way to any other appointed body, there's going to be a sunset on that. There has to be a review on that. It cannot just be the growth of state government in perpetuity.
Let me go here real quick. We're going to carry you guys over for a bit, continue to take your talkbacks on the iHeartRadio app and your phone calls as well.
Good morning, guys. Listener. Could you please ask Senator Lucero if, in fact, it's true, as he states, that their process violated the Constitution? Is it not possible to challenge it in court and strike down that entire bill based upon the fact that it violated the Constitution? Please ask him that question. Thank you.
Yes, the answer is it's absolutely possible to challenge. And that should happen. It's spendy, and it's going to take time.
Okay.
But that should absolutely happen, and I have no doubt, I haven't spoken to anybody, but I have no doubt that that ball is working right now, and there are people that are working to likely file a lawsuit. Here's the challenge, is that the Minnesota Supreme Court has 7 members. All 7 were appointed by Democrats, Democrat Governor Dayton and Walz. And so you still have to then have at least four of those 7 rule in favor of the truth, the Constitution, and ethics. And that's what I don't have confidence in.
We have Senator Lucero, Eric Lucero, also Representative Walter Hudson in studio. A lot of comments are coming in from the iHeartRadio app. We'll work through those, and I'll preview some of them. We'll get to more of what happened at the end of the legislative session with our guest this morning here on Twin Cities News Talk coming up. AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. John Justice, along with our guests this morning, State Representative Walter Hudson, also in studio, State Senator Eric Lucero, post-mortem on the disastrous end of the legislative session. Before we get to that, though, we had an incredible contest we were running, courtesy of American National Bank, looking for a small business to honor, and we have a winner to announce this morning.
Yeah, Twin Cities News Talk and American National Bank have proudly partnered together as part of Small Business Month to help out one local business with a free ad campaign on Twin Cities News Talk. After collecting nominations for the past few weeks, as you've heard here every single day on the John Justice Show, we're proud to announce that Heroes Helping Heroes, the Minnesota chapter, has been selected to receive a free ad campaign on Twin Cities News Talk, valued at $10,000, thanks to American National Bank. Thanks to everyone who showed support to your local businesses by nominating them. And Heroes Helping Heroes is dedicated to providing support to all first responders, both active and retired. And you can find more info about them at h3mn.org. So again, thanks to American National Bank for partnering with Twin Cities News Talk on this Small Business Month campaign, and Heroes Helping Heroes, the Minnesota chapter, has been selected to receive a free ad campaign here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Again, with Senator Lucero and Representative Hudson in studio, have a few talkbacks. They're kind of leaning into the same thing. I'll share them with you here in just a moment as we continue our discussion. And we've really been focusing on the process. And in my opinion, this the most important aspect of how this whole thing played out. And again, we have plenty of time to talk about what was actually passed moving forward. Let me approach it this way. So these rules were broken. several different times, okay, we talked about this ethics investigation taking place at the end that pushed these bills through. Senator Lucero, you mentioned how upset the left was when one of their bills didn't pass after the time had expired. So it seems like rules were being followed then. So are we looking at help me understand this better. Are we looking at like a Pirates of the Caribbean, their rules, but they're really more like guidelines? Is that what we're really looking at here when we hear about this? Because I think a lot of the audience and myself included, we see this and go, wait a second, we have a process, you guys have to adhere to this throughout the entire legislative session, and I've complained about it before, just the rules of decorum and the time spent addressing individuals and how it plays out. So those all get followed, but at the end we can essentially just toss those out the window and there really is no recourse or accountability.
Well, so we have the Constitution,
right,
which is at the top, but then underneath that there is, each body has a set of rules that they've created for themselves. They're internal, essentially think of them as bylaws if you want to, but they're called rules. And each body has their own rules. And then below that, then you have Masons. But the rules are what is supposed to be followed. And at the very end there, they very deliberately ignored several of the rules. Now, this gets into the weeds. But it is, and it's, one example will be, we were under call. And again, this is where it gets into the weeds. We were under call, the board, and then there was a call for absentees. The president does not have the authority to close the roll by himself when we're under call and there was a legitimate call for absentees. And he did it anyway. It needs to happen by a vote of the body. And he did it anyway. And therefore, what passed is clearly a violation of the Senate rules, and it is illegitimate. I cannot stress that enough. This bill that we're looking at right here closed or passed under those circumstances and is going to be signed into law, but it is illegitimate. And that's separate from the illegitimacy of having the 34th vote be by an accused felon.
So, and then you mentioned earlier, just so I can, and then Walter, I want to hear from you, but this can be challenged. The bill, I'm pointing at it right now in studio. Nobody can see me, but I'm actually pointing at the omnibus bill, and it's huge. It's bigger than my coffee mug, for crying out loud. So this can be challenged in court.
Absolutely.
It's just going to take time.
Okay. Yes.
So I have another question with regard to that, but Walter, I want to get your thoughts on just the process. Cause it kind of goes back to what you were mentioning before about if the GOP gets back into power. Mm-hmm. If we're looking at these more like guidelines anyways, you know, there's going to be a lot of individuals, and you were saying, you've heard from both sides going, if you guys get into power, just do what you want to do. They've set the precedent. Right. So are we going to stand for these rules? Are we not going to stand for these rules? And anyways, I hand it over to you.
Well, let's define the we, because it's all of us. It's not just those of us who are elected. There are two enforcing mechanisms for the rules of the legislature. One is the personal integrity of whoever is presiding over the body, which in this case is Bobby Joe Champion and Melissa Horman, respectively. Good luck. Okay. The second is the ballot box, because at the end of the day, here's the function that the rules serve. I'm going to be real raw with you, okay? The function that the rules serve is to give a plausible excuse to the majority to say no to things that they don't want to do. If they do want to do things, they can do things. They can do literally whatever the hell they want. We just saw it. The only real recourse, can this be challenged in court? Sure.
I guess the next question is going to be, should it be?
Is it
going to
go anywhere? Ultimately, probably not, for the reasons that Senator Lucero outlines. It's all the same people. It's all the same club. You know, it's like going to, you got a bully, and then you're going to go appeal to his best friend to stop bullying you. It's not going to play out. So ultimately, we are the enforcing mechanism. We, the people, are the enforcing mechanism for the rules of the House and the Senate by actually caring about them enough to be outraged at these abuses and then go to the ballot box in November and bring a bunch of our friends with us.
So, I'm going into the weeds on this now, but because I'm having a hard time believing that the circumstances are going to change moving forward. And let me back up as an example. I mentioned when you both joined me again, Walter Hudson and Eric Lucero, that in the Minnesota Constitution, it has the provision saying that a bill does not violate the single subject requirement under the Constitution as long as the provision is listed in the title of the bill. So they got around that by making the title 2 pages long and then inevitably made it 6 pages long. Now, these rules were put in place, and it sounds like they were put in place at a time when it was expected that whatever governing bodies were there doing their work were going to respect their job enough, their constituents enough, their voters enough to follow these rules. In which, but when all is said and done, there's very little that can be done to go and hold anybody accountable if these rules are broken. Like it's, and so I'm kind of going back to, it sounds like this process is broken. And my fear moving forward is that because of the way that we conduct our politics now, and because it's this win at all costs and just the nature of our politics, that moving forward, my expectation would be after what happened with the Minnesota alleged DFL and Nicole Mitchell and what we saw with that and just, you know, that whatever that excuse was of an ethics committee hearing. And then what we saw at the end of the session, I don't see how this doesn't become the norm moving forward. I mean, unless you said, Walter, and I don't want to stop you. You know, we do get a change of leadership and we return to some level of, you know, of sanity, rational sanity and following these rules. But if one party gets rule, the DFL gets total rule in a trifecta again, I don't see why they wouldn't go in. It seems like there's a precedent that's been set.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, our founding fathers, they understood it is the natural order of government to grow, to abuse, to usurp liberty. And that's really what this is all about. Whether it be the Constitution, whether it be the rules, whether it be any other process, it only is as good as the people that are willing to exercise conscience and self-control to follow that process. I know there's a Supreme Court ruling that says it is multiple subjects are permissible as long as they're in the title. I don't care that the Minnesota Supreme Court said that. It is clearly unconstitutional to have multiple subjects in the same bill.
Sure.
And just so people can understand, an omnibus bill in and of itself, let's take the transportation omnibus bill or the health and human services omnibus bill. It is going to have multiple subjects within it. Let's say transportation that are related to transportation. That in and of itself is bad. But this right here is a compilation of multiple omnibus bills. So taking transportation, health and human services, taxes, I don't even know what's all in there. I think there's 10 or 11 multiple separate omnibus bills, which in and of themselves contain multiple subjects, and then taking those multiple subject omnibus bills and putting them into one giant omnibus bill. This is clearly unconstitutional to any reasonable person, independent of what a 7-member Minnesota Supreme Court may have ruled in the past or might do in the future.
So Democrats have had the prevailing majority politically in terms of actual hands-on levers of political power in this state for decades, right? We haven't won statewide races in a long time. And as a result, the courts and all of these commissions and departments are all populated by like super woke left-wing activists. You speak about the founding fathers. One of the things that they feared was that we were going to get to precisely this point. They warned against the party system for exactly this reason. The Constitution was set up in order to provide checks and balances. Those checks and balances only work if there's legitimate tension and antagonism between the separations of power. We don't have that right now. What we have is a Supreme Court that's going to go along with whatever the majority in the legislature says, and a legislature that's going to go along with whatever the governor says. That is exactly the opposite of a check on power.
Yeah. Exactly.
There is no check on power. That's the problem. And so within the scope of a two-party system, the only real way to push back against that is to win.
Yeah.
And to restore balance.
I'm going to, if you guys are all right, I know I was going to boot you out, but AK is running late. We still have some comments that rolled in. You guys want to hang on a bit?
Sure.
Awesome.
All right. State Senator Eric Lucero, Representative Walter Hudson in studio. Leave a talkback comment. We'll continue our discussion with them. You can also give us a call. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. And you can email justice@iheartmedia.com.
The original talkback I sent, how are they going to win? How is the GOP going to get ahead of this and win these elections?
I've heard many of these talkbacks, and we want to get to AK will be joining us in studio shortly. I want to get to one particular thing that didn't pass, and that is the ERA. But just to address this, and it's probably, you know, if I had a nickel, you know, comment on how are we going to win these elections, you know, as we've been talking about, that seems to be the solution. We can take recourse and go after the lack of, you know, constitutionality of the omnibus bill. But at the end of the day, we do have to win elections. So State Senator Eric Lucero, Representative, State Representative Walter Hudson in studio. You know, we're talking about getting ballots in hands, but how do we move forward, get the message out there? How do we win elections? And Senator Lucero, we'll start with you.
Well, that is, it's a great question. It's an important answer. And the answer is, it doesn't come from the party. It comes from the people in every community. Every individual who cares about the present, who cares about the future, needs to stop looking to somebody else, looking to the party, thinking that somebody else is going to do it. They themselves need to begin to organize like-minded neighbors, friends, and anyone who can get out on a Saturday, sacrifice going to the cabin, begin to door knock, have information, connect, share, and spread the truth. That is how we win elections. It's not thinking that somebody else is going to do the work and we're going to sit in our armchair and complain.
Walter, before you answer, let me add something really quick. And I want to do this to the person. I want to share this to the person listening. The answer's not typically going to be one that you want to hear, those that are asking this, because it's not a flashy answer. Mm-hmm. I get something similar when I have on members of the GOP that people get frustrated on their voting record, and I talk to them, you know, on a weekly basis, Tom Emmer, and people get upset. Why aren't you asking about this, this, and this, and that? And typically my answer is, I like Tom. I have him on the show every week. I ask him the questions that need to be asked. But at the same time, I could hammer him and ask him all these other questions of things that bother you. You're typically not going to get the answer you want to get, because he's going to have an answer for you. It's just not going to be the one you want to get. Typically, that answer is going to be a person going, I shouldn't have done that. You're never going to get that. So the answer to how we win elections isn't flashy. But Walter, I'll let you respond to the comment.
Well, what Senator Lucero said is absolutely correct. It does come down to the granular level. And in a perfect world, the way it would work is we have all of these precinct chairs, right? Like, you go to caucus in your precinct and you elect a chair and a co-chair and a secretary and a treasurer. And at least in my experience, typically those are pretty informal roles that don't really have any follow-up. But in a perfect world, they would. You would have a precinct chair who would be taking personal responsibility for ensuring that that precinct, which precincts are relatively small in terms of the number of people, the number of houses that are contained within them, that that precinct gets door knocked. That precinct gets organized. That precinct has the ballots it needs. That precinct is turning in those ballots, right? That's the way it should work. It's not going to. It's unreasonable to expect that that's going to happen. But there is this ecosystem of support organizations around the Republican Party that, at least in my experience, they have learned their lessons from watching what happened in 2020 and 2022, and now realize, guys, we've got to play this game according to the rules as drafted, not according to the rules we would prefer. That means we're going to get this early voting game going. We're going to get ballots in boxes. We're going to take seriously the new media and the fact that the old rules don't apply. Like, that's the thing, is there's a certain inertia that has been dominating Republican campaigns, certainly in this state, for a long time. And it's centered around these old ideas of how the dynamics of a campaign work and an election work, where you're looking for things like October surprises and you're super focused on mailers and things like this. And I'm not saying that a mailer is an important or valuable investment. It is. But the level of influence that certain forms of media used to have, newspapers, television, that dynamic has entirely shifted.
Yeah.
And you have got to get in with the new way of doing things, whether it's through campaigning or your electoral strategy, your ground game. And a lot of people understand that who didn't understand it 2 years ago and 4 years ago. And I think it's going to make a big difference, especially considering the fact that Minnesota is looking good for Trump. Trump has decided that he's going to focus here. He's going to make investments here. The RNC is going to make investments here. We have the wind at our backs.
So in the remaining minutes that we have, let's talk about one particular thing that didn't get passed and its significance, and that is the ERA. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to you guys and talk about the significance of the fact that the DFL was not able to pass that ERA amendment. And it would seem as if they, you know, they were heading towards an opportunity, ran out of time, or was there more involved? So again, Senator Lucero and Representative Hudson, you know, feel free to.
Well, so we didn't see it in the Senate, which is a good thing. So I'll let Rep. Hudson explain what happened in the House first and then.
Yeah, so, I mean, there were two different versions of the ERA, though, the version that the Senate had seen and drafted and the version that the House drafted. And there was
Actually, I should correct myself then. We didn't see it this year. What we saw was last year. Actually, that's a good point.
Okay.
So, we did pass it. It was in your hands. Balance of it was in that you guys had was this year.
Correct. And so the version that came from the Senate was still bad, but was like leaps and bounds above what the House was trying to put through. The language that the House was trying to shove through and put on the ballot as a constitutional amendment, if that had been ratified, it would have broken the jurisprudence of the state of Minnesota. We would not be able to function as a state. You would have to be, if this had passed, you would have to be suicidal to continue doing business in the state of Minnesota. Because what it said was it outlined all these different categories, race, color, national origin, ancestry, gender identity and expression, sex and what have you. And what it said was that if you can demonstrate discrimination in effect, those are the two magic words, in effect, then that's a violation. That's a form of harassment. And you can be sued for that. And what that means that literally anybody for any conceivable actual or perceived reason that they could say, well, you know what? This guy's trash gets picked up before mine and I'm gay and he's not. So obviously I'm being discriminated against. And so I want to sue the city for discriminating. I mean, it theoretically could be that petty. And when you put that sort of thing out there, you're going to put that in the Constitution, the highest law of the land. The impact would be, you would have no flexibility to function whatsoever. And just think, I want you to really think about this. If you work for an employer now, you know what it's like dealing with HR and the extent to which you have to wear oven mitts and walk around on your tippy toes and wear kid gloves in dealing with everyone for fear of being accused of something and being accused of discrimination and facing discipline. Imagine that. Imagine we're looking at a volume dial, and right now that's about a 3. This would dial it up to the Spinal Tap 11. It would be unworkable.
Is it going to
every level of government?
You know, the other thing I'll add is I had showed people at my church actually the actual text that would be added to the Constitution if it would have passed.
Yeah,
and I believe that text was 3/4 of a page, if I remember correctly. The question that would have appeared on the ballot was one sentence long.
Yes.
I think it was 2 lines, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So 2 lines for the question that would underneath add 3/4 of a page to the Constitution. And to the point, completely unworkable, and it would make it incredibly challenging. I love that analogy, oven mitts and yeah. Walking on eggshells. That's what it is.
So it didn't pass. Quick question, and I'll cut you guys loose. We have A.K. Kamara, RNC National Committeeman, A.K. Kamara in studio.
Committeeman-elect.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was saying. That's a lot. I got people challenging me on my pronunciation of Faribault, for crying out loud. So, didn't pass. How much of that, first question is, before we wrap up, so how much of that was sort of internally the DFL derailing it from passing over concerns potentially, and I'm speaking to individuals in the DFL that may have had some sanity with regards to this. Was there anything sort of internal that you think kept this from actually passing, or was it simply just it ran out of time and they couldn't get it done?
Well, this is one of the things that runs afoul of their narrative that we're to blame, the Republicans and the minority were to blame for the things crashing and burning at the end of the session. They wasted days on this woke nonsense. And I believe they knew they had the intention of not passing it. I don't think Melissa Horman wants this to be part of the state constitution. I don't think Aaron Murphy wanted to see the jurisprudence of the state collapse. But again, they made the decision early on in the term that they were going to rest their entire legislative agenda upon the whims of Aaron May Quaid and Lee Finke. And when you do that, You get arm twisted into, we have to hear this. We have to pass this. This is really important to the queer community. Yada, yada. I mean, you could see Finke frantically running around the chamber, getting more and more frantic as the hours ticked on towards the end of session, because this was their top priority, is we need to pass this nonsense. And I don't think leadership actually wanted it. They kind of telegraphed in their communications with the press, if we can get to it, we'll see what happens. Time's running out. We'll see. We're going to try. That's not the way you talk about something that you're hell-bent on passing, right? And so I think there was probably recognition amongst the leadership that this was going to potentially tank them electorally in its form. Because the other thing that it does, by the way, we didn't even talk about this, it would permanently enshrine the PRO Act. So this would be amending the state constitution for the purpose of permanently stripping civil rights from an entire category of human beings. I mean, this is worse than 1864, what they were trying to do.
I posted on X yesterday, thank the good Lord Almighty for small victories that this didn't get passed.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, thank you for the time this morning. State Senator Eric Lucero, State Representative Walter Hudson. Next time we have you on, Walter, we will get into your latest endeavor. Yeah. Where would you like people to go and check that out, if those that want to get up to speed on it?
CornerstoneStandard.com.
We'll get into it.
All right.
It's interesting. I like it. Thank you, guys.
All right. Take
Appreciate
care.
It.